This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Neil Langtow. His new book is The Approaching Storm, Roosevelt, Wilson, Adams, and Their Clash Over America's Future. The Great War, then called, now we call it the First World War, the first of the tragedies to tear apart Europe, ongoing, tearing apart sovereignty and boundaries. These are the empires who engaged in challenges to each other for the 19th century, and then with the new technology of mass murder, engaged in frontier fighting beginning in the summer and fall of 1914. The front lines have now stabilized. It's early 1915. America has stayed back from the war. Wilson has concerns of domestic politics and does not see any place in Europe for America. However, Jane Addams, we will speak of her first, sees the massacres going on in Europe and responds with peace conferences. Or there's very careful language here. Let's begin in January of 1915. Jane Addams calls the Women's Peace Party at the Willard Hotel. Is this popular with progressives, Neil?
Well, it's an interesting thing, this establishment of what's called the Women's Peace Party. Many American women seem to be okay with it. And I think she tried to cast a fairly wide net because she invited conservative American women to attend this conference, like, for example, women in the Daughters of the American Revolution. Then she also invited women who would probably be seen on the fairly far left. So the Women's Peace Party was seen as almost a pressure group for peace in the United States. I think it was accepted by most people as long as they weren't getting into fairly controversial issues or really questioning the direction of American foreign policy. But once Jane Addams and some of her followers start to do that, and eventually they're going to go to Europe to attend another conference, then you're going to start seeing a great deal of criticism of Addams, and really her reputation is going to suffer in the United States a great deal because she is seen as moving beyond her place as sort of a, as I said, a social worker, someone who is concerned about, how people are living their lives comfortably and healthily and things like that. But she has no right, is the belief, to involve herself in what she's usually a masculine preserve, you know, international affairs and diplomacy. So how dare she do that? So that's going to be what happens to Jane Addams in 1915 when she's going to make this trip to Europe and she's going to, after this Women's Peace Conference, she's going to visit the heads of state of both sides, which is really citizen diplomacy before I think the term existed. And I think it's quite remarkable.
All right, let's go along with her, Neil. All right, she sails on the Holland-American line in March of 1915. 40 women accompany her, and they run the submarines. The submarines are out there to sink craft who are deemed by the German commanders to be carrying war munitions or war aid for the British. The U.S. is participating in that it's a neutral, but it's selling to the British who have a blockade on Germany. So both sides, Germany practicing the submarines to blockade and cut off food and supplies to Britain, and Britain with its fleet cutting off supplies and food to Germany. It's a tangle, and Wilson will involve in it. But Jane Addams and her 40 traveled not only to Europe, but they're welcomed by all the leadership. I was struck by how her reputation was global. What did she get from those conversations? What did the progressives get from those conversations? She was in Berlin. She was in Paris. She was in London. What was the result?
I think what Addams was looking for was some indication that there was interest in peace being made. And if someone would help the two sides to get together and talk, there would be an opportunity. Unfortunately, a lot of her message got garbled back in the United States. It came back in the United States, often in some of the hostile newspapers, of saying, well, Jane Addams is trying to stop the war. She's going to Germany and telling them to stop fighting, which is not at all what she was trying to do. She simply went to speak to them and tried to feel them out for any interest in peace. Now, the question becomes, how frank were they in their talks with them? The Germans, of course, said, we don't want as much as what the British are saying. We would have we're willing to accept a mild peace, or, both sides are going to say what they think the Americans want to hear, because they know Jane Addams is going to come back and report it to Wilson. And I think Addams was a big name, and that was one of the reasons they went, they all agreed to see her. But I think also once one country agreed to see her, I think they all felt we have to see her or it's not going to play well in the United States. Probably why the Germans did. The French were probably the most hostile. They really did not want to talk to her, didn't want to really talk peace at all. And pretty much, you know, kind of whatever, you know, we'll humor you and talk to you for a few minutes, but we're not really interested in having a fruitful conversation. She also saw the Pope, who wasn't that quite interested in hearing from her.
T.R. is at odds with Jane Addams. And is this when he wrote that very hostile letter to her while she was in Europe, or was that before?
He wrote the letter in response to the formation of the Women's Peace Party, which was sort of the jumping off point to this trip to Europe. Someone in the Women's Peace Party wrote to Roosevelt asking whether he might want to be involved or endorse it or whatever. And he wrote this absolutely, you know, in typical TR fashion with the flowery language, and goes on for two pages, basically ripping them in every direction possible. How you, foolish women doing this. This is the worst thing you should be doing. If you want to do something, you should be doing something for Belgium, not traipsing, across the world doing these kinds of things. Originally, it was a private letter, but the letter, in fact, did get out and was widely publicized. And of course, the press at the time jumped all over it, saying, "Oh, it looks like, you know, the former compadres, Jane Addams and Theodore Roosevelt, who had been together in the Progressive Party, are now fighting it out and things like that." Addams was pretty cool with it. She pretty much said, "You know, I don't always agree with Colonel Roosevelt, and he's allowed to have free speech, but I don't agree with his particular perspective." But there's a lot of material in Roosevelt's letters where he says, "My friend Jane Addams is so wrong." Like he considers her his friend still, but he feels that she and other pacifists are completely in the wrong and should be not trying to bring about any peace settlement right now.
And at the same time, and we have about a minute here, Neil, Edith Bowling is introduced, a widow introduced to Woodrow Wilson. He's lost his first wife the year before, and he's considered lonely by those who know him in the White House. Edith Bowling is no intellectual, and she's about to transform Wilson's life. Was he distracted in 1915 at this point?
I think he could multitask, but certainly he exerted a considerable amount of effort and time on this woman. He became, I said it in the book, obsessed. He is obsessed with her. He writes letter after letter to her. He's head over heels in love. He asked her to marry her in a month. He's showing her the very private state documents. So yes, he falls head over heels in love. And of course they do marry in 1915, but I think the American public would have been shocked. And they were shocked when it came out that he was going to get married, because this was the fact he was courting her was not known at the time.
The world,
and she will soon have a great influence on him.
Yeah, great influence. The World War is about to crowd into progressivism in America with the crisis of the sinking of Lusitania. The book is the Approaching Storm, Roosevelt, Wilson, Addams, and Their Clash.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed, or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message comes from Greenlight. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on what your kids are spending with real-time notifications. Join millions of parents and kids building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get started risk-free at greenlight.com/iHeart.